Hi, I'm Don Landis. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Don.
Everybody hear me okay? Okay, just wanted to introduce myself. This is my good friend Sheldon F. from Las Vegas, Nevada. And what we're going to do in this brief time that we're allotted is we're going to talk about the big book. We're going to talk about the 12 steps of recovery. Hopefully, we're going to talk a little bit about what we were like, what's happened to us, and what we're like today. And I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Get some pertinent housekeeping out of the way. I'm 26 years sober. My sobriety date is September 16th, 1991. I have a sponsor. He has a sponsor. I have a home group. It's the SOS Bins group where, I don't know, men are men and the cattle are nervous. I don't know what to say about my home group. But it's a great home group. I'm real proud of those guys. I hope you love your home group the way I love my home group. Best thing I could tell you about my home group is everybody's got their hand on the rope. And that's not unusual. Lots of groups, everybody's got their hand on the rope, but they're kind of pulling in different directions. But we actually have our hands on the rope and we're pulling in the same direction. So there seems to be some momentum, spiritual in nature, where we're actually getting some things done and guys are getting sober there. And we got a lot of young guys, a lot of old guys, good, well-rounded mix of the community is represented in our meeting. And I just love my home group. I live in Bellingham, Washington. If you don't know where that is, go to Seattle. And then drive about 100 miles north, stop about 20 miles from the Canadian border, and you'll be in Bellingham. 20 miles from Canadian border, America's first defense against Canada, I suppose. And it's beautiful up there. You know, my wife Eileen and I, another good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, we moved up there in 2004, and it's mountains and streams and lakes and the bay, and it's just wonderful, and wildlife, and it's just beautiful. We're city kids, so it was a little bit of a culture shock when we got there, but we're real comfortable with it now and having a very good time. And I don't know if I said we moved there in 2004 and they were doing AA completely wrong when we got there. I remember, I don't know if you've ever relocated, that's the first thing you notice is, boy, we got here right in the nick of time. I don't know how they've made it this far without us. And of course, there is nothing wrong with the AA there. The AA works, the book's everywhere. And that I think is really important. Why do I think the book is such an important piece of literature? What's this all about, a book? I mean, it's one thing for us to be here together this weekend and sit down and just think about that. You took time out of your busy lives, right? Paid some money to go hang out with some people you see all the time anyway, a lot of you. To go hear a couple of goobers talk about a book you already own. For many of you that you've already read. And the reason I'm such a big guy about the book is I know how AA started. And when AA started, we didn't have 90 meetings in 90 days. We didn't have a book. We didn't have sponsorship the way that we know it today. You know, we were a very small fledgling group of people that had a glancing idea that started with spiritual inspiration with a drunk named Bill W. who thought in order for him to survive, he had to somehow carry a message of some beneficial nature to the next suffering alcoholic. And what's the message that he carried? The simple message, you don't have to hurt no more. I know the way out. There's a power greater than you that's waiting to help you. And I can show you how to get there. You know, and Bill reached back into the abyss, you know, and he grabbed a lot of hands and not many people wanted to grab his hand. And he finally got a hand that stuck, and that was Dr. Bob. And after that, there was no stopping us. No stopping till what? Till everybody had their opportunity to recover. So what we're trying to do simply as AA members is we're trying to do what our forefathers did. We're trying to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. There's no other job in AA. That's our only job. Everything else is activity that promotes that job. So it's important that we do things like talk about the book because we have to be prepared for the work that's at hand, the work that's coming to us, the people that haven't arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous yet that are finishing up their stories, that are out there tonight on the streets and they're dying and they're coming to AA, bet your bottom dollar. And we have to prepare ourselves because people were here on the ready for us and that's our job today. So we discuss this literature. We put it into life and we put it into action in our lives. So what? So we can carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. And in order for me to have what's occurred in my life, which is a complete resurrection after an utter and complete failure of my own resources in my life, the best I could do was arrive more dead than alive in AA at age 31. And I need to remember that as I stand here before you, living a good life, in a healthy marriage, surrounded by love and friendship, doing okay financially, having the best life with the best people I've ever known that's in place in my life today. Why those facts are in life, I can never forget who came to Alcoholics Anonymous and what propelled me here. That was the best I could do under my own power. And that's important, more important for me to remember that today than it was the day that I walked in. Because it's easy to surrender when you got nothing in your pocket. It's easy surrender when nobody wants nothing to do with you. It's easy surrender when you got no career and you've burned it to the ground and you've hurt every family member that had the misfortune of caring about you. Surrender is easy. But a funny thing happens about the ego. The ego is indestructible. You can smash it, you can burn it, you can tear it into a million pieces, you can scatter it to the winds of the earth, you can take it to the bottom of the ocean and cover it with rock. You can't destroy the human ego, it regenerates. And why all these wonderful things in my life, these blessings I described to you, this bounce in my step, this glint in my eye because of my membership in Alcoholics Anonymous, the thing I know that I've got to guard against, my ego is alive and well today. And its main job is to separate me from you and therefore separate me from God. And when that happens, I'm on thin ice. So I'm so delighted to have the opportunity to come and talk about this magic problem that changed and revolutionized my life. And here's the most important thing, and there's people here. Is there anybody here in their first year of sobriety? If you could, just raise your hand so I could see. Anybody here in their first year? Fantastic. I want you to know you're very welcome here. I want to tell you what I think is the most impressive thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous worked, and I didn't want it to work. Alcoholics Anonymous worked, and I didn't believe in it. I didn't come here to get sober. I came in here because I was in trouble. Isn't that unusual? And most of us are chased in here by some form of consequence, aren't we? That's how I got chased in here. So AA does not work because of the alcoholic. It works in spite of him. And why is that good news for all of us? Because you don't have to be bigger, smarter, stronger, faster than the next guy. We can stop comparing ourselves to other people right now. The only reason to compare yourself to another one of God's kids is because your power is going to be involved in the solution. So you want to see how your power matches up with theirs. How's my power matching up with yours? He's doing pretty good, but I don't think I'm as strong as him. I don't think I can do what he's done. That doesn't apply here. We can stop comparing ourselves right now because our power has nothing to do with the solution. And what we're going to talk about, hopefully this evening, are the first three steps. And in our first step, we're going to talk a lot about power. And in the second step, we're going to talk a lot about power. And in the third step, we're going to talk a lot about power. Because that's the real dilemma here. Either lack of it or lack of it and thinking we got it. That's really, if you want to know what almost killed me with my alcoholism, is I actually thought that I had my hands on the reins, that I was involved. That as the cart of my life was careening towards the cliff and my ultimate demise, I actually thought, you know what I was? I was like that little kid sitting in the back seat with the play steering wheel with the little beep, beep, he gets to honk it, and he's actually turning it thinking he's making the car turn. That's me and my alcoholism. I actually thought I had some power where that was concerned. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about our first step in this first session. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And there's some things that I had to get over, some misconceptions I had about that when I first got here. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. What I want to do is I want to start off reading something from the big book, because the title of this thing was The Big Book Comes Alive. So we should at least read a paragraph while we're here this weekend.
At least one or two.
We get four in there. I'm good. How about you, buddy? There's a book? Yes. It's a big book. And, Chapter 3, More About Alcoholism, page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit that we were real alcoholic. No person likes to think he's bodily and mentally different from his fellows. I don't want to admit this thing. I don't want to think it's happening to me. I want to come up with every excuse I possibly can. I want to be a rationalizer and a justifier. I don't want to be an alcoholic. I'll be anything but an alcoholic. Not a lot of class there. Therefore, it's not surprising our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. I know what it looks like to you, but it's really not that bad. Let me show you why. The idea that drinking is, the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it in the gates of insanity or death. The great obsession of every abnormal drinker. What's my great obsession? What can I, what's an obsession? Let's start there. What's a good, simple explanation of obsession that everybody can latch onto and you can use? How about this? When I think of little or nothing else. Works for me. So when I think of little or nothing else but my great obsession, which is somehow, someday, I'm going to control and enjoy my drinking. I'm going to stop going to jail, crashing cars, breaking hearts, being a loser, hurting family members, all that stuff. I remember when it worked. I'm going to get there again. I just have to get the right formula. I have to focus. I have to try harder. I'm not going to quit drinking because that's bananas. But it's these other things. You know, I got to change my friends. Maybe I got to change my job, my woman, my neighbor. Something's got to change. It's not the drinking. I know it looks like the drinking. But I have this obsession. And where does the obsession live? Is it outside of me? No, it's between my ears. It's the constant chatter in my head that I'm going to figure it out, that this time it's going to be different. And I can't let go of the thought. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. Or presently maybe. It's easy to concede to that, to my innermost self. I think I'm doing that when I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I've been driven into Alcoholics Anonymous under the lash of active alcoholism, under the weight of my consequences. So it's easy to come in here for me, and when somebody goes, you might be an alcoholic, I'm like, no kidding. You think? You think? I went to jail in Rancho Cucamonga, California, in a blackout. Lots of people do that. I happened to be naked at the time. And I think we can all agree that if you're in a blackout and you go to jail in Rancho Cucamonga naked, that ain't social drinking, now is it? So I have no problem with the trouble surrounding my drinking. You see, that's what I think alcoholism is. I go to jail, I crash cars, I break hearts, I can't keep jobs. I think that's what alcoholism is, but it's not, is it? I had to learn what alcoholism was after I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I thought it was the results of what happened, the actions I take when a guy like me drinks. I think that's my alcoholism. I think it's consequence. You see, for many years, I didn't want to quit drinking. What I wanted was the consequences to stop. Mm-hmm. Now, I might have said to you, I don't want to drink anymore. I don't want to hurt you anymore. I don't want to live that way. I was lying. What I wanted was to drink to oblivion without consequence. I want to check out. I want to be free of what? Of me. I want to stop the madness in my head. I want to stop the boredom I live in a sober state. I want to try to make some sense of this thing called life, and the only thing that seems to do that for me is pouring whiskey in me. I don't want the consequences. I think if you can get rid of the consequences, you get rid of my alcoholism. But I'm mistaken. Where is my innermost self located? Oh, well, it's inside you, isn't it? Well, yeah, it is. But I'll tell you, my first sponsor did a first step exercise with me. It was interesting. And I did this my first week in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a sponsor my second night in AA, and he was a big book guy, and he got me busy. He was not a guy that wanted me to get my feet underneath me. He didn't care that I had audio and visual hallucinations. He said, you can stack chairs, just keep grabbing till one is actually there, and then you'll go stack them. And he was a big believer in getting busy in this stuff, that action was going to be the magic word. So he told me that you really couldn't say that you completed the first step until you could teach somebody the first step. Until you can teach it, you don't know it. He said, so tomorrow night after the meeting, this is, I'm a week sober. He says, we're going to sit down and I want you to teach me the first step. Because we've been talking about the first step every night after meetings. He thought I'd had enough information. He says, you have all the information about the first step you're ever going to need to stay sober the rest of your life. The problem is that's not how we stay sober. Right now it's up here. We have to find out if it got down to here. We have to get it from your head to your heart. And I don't know if you've done that unless you can teach it to me. So I went home and I boned up, you know what I mean? Because I might be a week sober, but I still got an ego. And I hear a challenge when I hear one. And it's like, I'm gonna do that. So I got out the 12 and 12, the big book. I read everything I could find on the first step. And after the meeting the next night, I gave, in my humble opinion, the greatest dissertation on the first step ever given in Alcoholics Anonymous by a newcomer. I have no idea if my sponsor was impressed, but I'll tell you this much. I had tears in my eyes. You know what I mean? It was outstanding. And I knew he was going to tell me, my God, we've been in AA's been here for almost 7 years. We've been waiting for you. And that's not what he said. He said no. Well, he said no the way he always said no. He said it three times. He said no, no, no. And he asked me if I had admitted to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And I said, I think so. And he said, well, let's find out. He said, go home to your sister's house tonight where you're mooching a room. And I want you to get quiet, sit in the end of the bed in the dark, no TV, no radio, no distraction. And I want you to think one thing and one thing only in your mind and say it over and over in your mind, in your voice. Do that for about 15 minutes and then call me. And what I want you to say is, I'm an alcoholic. Nothing more, nothing less. I'm an alcoholic. And it sounded silly, a little embarrassed, but I did it, you know. I sat on the end of the bed in the dark all alone, and I said, all right, he's my sponsor. I said, I do what he asked me to do. Okay. I'm an alcoholic. 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 And as I said that over and over in my mind, things suddenly became attached to that simple statement, things I thought I'd forgotten, things I'd hoped I'd forgotten. And I started seeing my life unravel in front of me in my own mind, and I started seeing all the things connected with my drinking life. And I did that for about 15 minutes, and when I got off the phone, I called my sponsor up, and he said, did you do it? I said, yeah, man, and I'm in a lot of trouble. And I got the first step that night. And he explained to me that if I didn't understand the trouble I was in, why I was in the first step, that I would never approach the rest of the steps with the kind of vigor and force required for their successful consummation. Because why would you? Why would I become open-minded to the existence that there's a power greater than me that could restore me to sanity if I didn't think my bacon was on the line? Why would I? Why would I turn everything over to that power if I didn't think my very life was at stake? Why would I take all those things, those humbling, embarrassing things that I swore I'd take to my grave? Why would I get those down on paper and go through that process of inventory with God and another human being if I didn't think my very life was at stake? Why would I take that information, those things I have no power to do anything about? Why would I bring them to this God I don't even believe in when I'm new? Why would I do that if I didn't think I was going to die if I didn't? Why would I go back and clean it up and face those people I hope I never had to see again? Something has to happen in the first step that's going to carry me through the rest of the steps. You know, there's something that new people have in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's probably the most precious thing that you can have when you're new. It's a commodity that without this commodity, I really don't believe you're going to have success going through the steps. And most newcomers have it. I haven't really met a good newcomer that didn't have it. And not one of these newcomers, including myself, when I had it when I was new, recognized the value of this commodity. And why is that? Oh, it makes you feel bad. You know, the ingredients of this commodity seem to be guilt and shame and remorse. And it turns out that this commodity, this precious commodity that we have when we're new, is called desperation. And why is this desperation so important? Well, it turns out that this desperation we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous is truly the propellant that will end up taking us through the steps. It's the thing that pushes us through when we don't want to go. It's the thing that makes us open-minded because we still remember where we just came from. It's the force, it's the inertia that gets us out of the way and pushes us towards God. But here's the problem. Like any propellant you can think of, you don't have an inexhaustible supply. I mean, how much you got? 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months. You know, we come in here with our new friends and I talk to new guys in AA all the time and I go, what step are you on, man? He's 6 months sober. He goes, well, I'm the second step. How's that possible? Talk to guys, he's got 4 months. What step are you on? Well, I'm just starting the third step. My sponsor wants me to kind of take my time. He really wants to make sure I understand this stuff. Understand it, why? What's the, is this intellectual? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were in AA. I thought we were in a spiritual way of life. I must have shown up in the college course of AA. There must be a curriculum here. So when I'm complete, you'll give me a diploma, and I can hang it on my wall, and it'll say, Don Landis completed Alcoholics Anonymous and has conquered alcoholism, and I can skip down my merry way. That's not what we're talking about here. This is not intellectual. This is spiritual. This is not of the head. This is of the heart. When we approach it from the head, we get the results of intellect. When we approach it from the heart, we get results of the spirit. I want results of the spirit. That is the power we are talking about here. So we stop worrying about perfection. Perfection is something that's man-made by our ego and it lives in our intellect. It doesn't exist. We can stop worrying about our new friends being perfect and we can just get them through the work. All we're trying to do is get them a proper introduction. You know what AA is? It's an invitation. You know what the 12 steps are? It's an invitation. Invitation to what? Go home. Go back where you came from. Hook up with that power that made you. That we walked away from. But we make it intellectual. We sit around rooms discussing the big book. What did Bill really mean when he wrote rarely?
Well, you know the Greek origin of the word rarely.
I want to throw my book at people. Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is a set of instructions or directions if you prefer. It is the menu, it is not the food. I would not try to attempt what we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous without directions, though, I'll tell you that. I'll give you a simple analogy for that. When I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor decided that he didn't want me to go back in the career that I had had for many years and drank myself out of, because he was afraid I'd make too much money. I know that's strange, that doesn't sound like real life, but he said, no, you'll go back there and then you'll make the big money and then your ego won't be smashed and you won't have time for AA and you'll drink and you'll die and it won't matter anyway. No, Don, for you, we need something humbling. And he found out I'd never work with my hands. So he got me a job as a laborer on a framing crew. Now, I'd love to tell you at this point in my story that I found out my true life's calling was to work with my hands, but I'd be lying. I sucked at that job. I was awful. I had a nickname on the job site, the bleeder, okay? Now, that's new in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, today, if you were to come to my home and I opened up my garage and I took you inside, you would see workbenches built all the way around the garage, and I built those workbenches. On the back of those workbenches, you would see an organized peg hanging system, and every hand tool known to man is hanging on there, power tools included. Underneath those benches where I have built-in storage, you would see every power tool known. Around the perimeter of my garage, you would see every stand-up saw. You can tile saws, band saws, chop saws, radial arm saws, reciprocating saws. I got it all, right? For a guy that couldn't handle a hammer without hurting himself, something has happened. And here's what happened. I got the directions. Then what? I sucked. To this day, I'll get a tool I've never used before. You know what I do? I open the box, I get the directions out. And then I walk away from the box. I get as far away from it as possible. I go back in the house, I sit down, and I read the directions. And there's a certain amount of information that I get out of those directions that is helpful. I get a general idea of what this thing is supposed to do and the warnings about it, what to do. Now, you do this, you may cut this off. You know, that's important information, too. The big book isn't just about if you do this, you'll get all this wonderful stuff. It's full of warnings, too. If you do this, you're going to die. That's a big warning in the big book. It's all through it. And so then what do? Do I just fire that sucker up and start using? Oh, no. No, why would I do that? Why would I not make use of the experience that went before me? Why would I use a tool like I'm the first human being in the world that ever had to use it? No, I find out other people that own that tool. And I say, how do you use this? And I'll have a buddy come over that already owns that tool, and he'll show me how to use it. And as I'm watching him demonstrate how to use the tool, I will say things like this. Oh, I would have never figured that out. We do the same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get the directions, and then we get a sponsor. Our sponsor shows us how to use the tool through demonstration. We watch him use the tools in his life. We go, oh, that's how you do it. I would have never known how. That's how you be a married man. That's how you go to work. That's how you pay your taxes. That's how you show up at AA. That's how you set up a meeting. That's how you do 12-step work. I would have never known that. I get taught through demonstration. And then what do? I practice. And I'm terrible at first, but I stick with it. Because repetition breeds familiarity, and familiarity breeds comfort. So as I stay in the process of the 12 steps over and over again, I get familiar through repetition, and I get comfortable. And suddenly I wake up one day, and I know how to use the tools of my life, and then it becomes a choice to serve God or serve Don. So the first step, and I'm going to take about 3-4 minutes, turn over to my buddy Sheldon. I think that my problem is the consequences of my drinking. What that doesn't explain is why, what happens to me when I don't drink. Because if drinking is my problem, then all I have to do is stop drinking and I'll be fine, correct? Makes sense to me. I tried it for about 5-6 years after I had self-knowledge. After I knew the drink was killing me, not mom or dad or the district attorney telling me, when I knew the drink was killing me, I knew I had to stop and I knew it would be no big deal stopping. Because I have a problem with drinking, so I just need to knock it off and everything will be fine because I have been brainwashed, as I believe most people in this room before they came to Alcoholics Anonymous underwent a successful brainwashing as I did. And my brainwashing was carried out by the people that knew me more than anyone else and wanted the best things in the world for me. And I don't know what they said to you, but this is what they said to me. You're a great guy. We love you. You got a lot of potential. You know, you could probably be anything you wanted to be if you just quit drinking. You know, you could go anywhere you wanted to go if you just quit drinking. All your dreams would come true if you just quit drinking. You'd be so happy if you just quit drinking. So I lay my experience against that, and I go, let's see. I went to jail. I was drinking. Smacked that guy. I was drinking. Blew up the relationship. I was drinking. Crashed the car. I was drinking. And it starts to make sense in my alcoholic mind. Yeah. If I quit drinking, everything will be fine. So what do? I quit drinking. And what do I wait for? Everything to be fine. But what happens? I go insane in my own skin. In short order, I have what's described in the doctor's opinion, which my friend Sheldon is going to talk about, is I'm arriving in a state where I am rendered irritable, restless, and discontent, which I believe is the greatest understatement in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the propulsion system for untreated alcoholism. It is what takes me back to the drink. You see, I don't have a drinking problem, I have a living problem. Drinking is my solution, it is not my problem. I hate the way I feel when I'm sober. That's my big secret, not that I drink too much. It's that when I don't drink and everybody around me goes, you're doing so well, we're so proud of you, it's all gonna be fine. I wanna kill them or myself. And it's shameful and it's embarrassing that the thing that's ripping the skin off of your life, when you're removed from it, you miss it desperately. Like the most obsessive love affair you can ever imagine. Where everyone's saying, you're better off without her. She was going to kill you. She never loved you. You deserve better. I know. I know what it looks like. God, I miss her. I think about her all the time. I see her everywhere I go and every song I hear. I just miss her desperately. I feel so empty without her. And I will try the old game again. Because when I live in irritable, restless, and discontent, I have a saturation point. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you asked me what kills alcoholics, I would have said whiskey and car crashes with no hesitation. And today I say discontent. Let's flip over to a vision for you real quickly. Bottom of page 151. Now and then a serious drinker being dry at the moment says, I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. Why do people leave Alcoholics Anonymous and go back to the grinder they just left? They're not happy about their sobriety. It's not confusing. We could say they weren't going to enough meetings, they weren't working the steps, they didn't have a good conscious contact, and all that might be true, but all those things are designed to create personal happiness in a sober state. Contentment. Contentment. And you know, contentment is not happiness. You know what's funny? We get confused about that. Happy, unhappy. I can live with happy, unhappy. That's about my money, what kind of mood my wife's in, how it's going in business. That's the conveyor belt of life, right? Everybody gets their turn in the barrel, happy, unhappy. I can live with that. Content or discontent are much more powerful, and this is why. When I am truly discontent, spiritually discontent, living in untreated alcoholism, drunk or sober, it doesn't matter how much money I make, how many people tell me I'm the man, how many things go my way in business. You know what alcoholics like? You know what we like? We like it when it's wrong. We like it when there's things wrong in our life, so we have an explanation for why we feel like crap. I feel like crap and I go, well, you know, I got fired. That I should feel like crap. I feel like crap. Well, she left me. You know, that makes sense. I should feel like crap. I got a bad diagnosis. I should feel like crap. You know what makes us crazy? I mean, local is when there's nothing wrong. Oh, but we feel like something's wrong. We lay in bed at night trying to put our finger on it. We're doing the math, aren't we? I see a job. Job's good. I guess got a promotion. They like me at work. Nope, not the job. Wife. Maybe sir. No. She's smoking hot. Likes me too. God, not the wife. The kids. Kids are good. Good. Money's good. Neighbors. Nope. Nice neighborhood. AA. No, everybody likes me in AA. They actually think I'm a good example. That's weird. Huh? That's weird. Why do I want to kill myself? I don't know. And we go to meetings, right? We lie, we go to meetings. How's it going, Donnie? Good. Couldn't be better. Any better I go on a shooting spree. How are you? And we're discontent and we're confused because we've been brainwashed into thinking if we get out of the trouble and we have the things that the world tells us make people happy and we have those things, we'll be happy. It's got nothing to do with alcoholism. We're discontent. Nothing from outside of me can comfort that disturbance that lives on the inside. It is inaccessible by things of man and outside of me. The disturbance is on the inside. I take things from the outside and I try to stuff them into a place that they don't fit and it doesn't work. And I'm discontent no matter how good my life gets. It's untreated alcoholism. I have a complete and utter inability to experience joy in a sober state. But here's the good news. True contentment, the kind of contentment that the old timers call serenity around here, doesn't matter what's going on in your life. When you have true spiritual contentment, you're living simply the way you think God would have you live, with your heart and mind attuned to the welfare of others, doing the work described in this book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Doesn't matter what's going on outside. Doesn't matter how things are going. Doesn't matter. Doesn't mean you like it. It just means that you don't get crazy. It just means that you don't get discontent. Because things outside of you cannot disturb your inner contentment. Because your inner contentment was not created by things outside of you. It's created by service to others, relationship with God, hearts and mind attuned to the welfare of others. These things are not disturbed by things made of man and things outside of ourselves. So this mysterious thing that we hear about when we're new, that we don't understand what the old timers are talking about, the inside job, starts to make more sense. We got to bring the right stuff if we're going to fix the inside job. Turn it over to you, Sheldon.